Welcome to another edition of the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com. At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter is where you could follow us over on Twitter, at Matt Aaron Show. On Facebook, you got the Matthew Aaron Show. You type into the search bar, you hit like, you will give us a follow there. You'll get all our updates, who's coming on the show, what have yous. Send in some questions, get involved. I have no problem doing less work, so please send over whatever you got. You can listen to the podcast over at Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen at Apple Podcasts, where you could subscribe. And where I listen to all the podcasts that I listen to is at Spotify. And if you hit the follow button on Spotify, they send them all right to you. They notify you when you got a new podcast. You're rocking and ready to go. Today's show is going to be great because we have Adam Rodriguez from Criminal Minds, CSI Miami, Magic Mike 2, Empire, and he's going to be in the spinoff of Penny Dreadful. Penny Dreadful, I believe City Angels is the subtitle for it, and it's, yes, City Angels, and it's going to be April 26th on Showtime. So we're going to talk to Adam about that. Hillary Barriford's going to join me as well. She made it sound like, you know, I think she's bored. I think this isolation has bored everybody. I hope we're at least giving you guys something to listen to, something to enjoy. I know I've been working on scripts. I've been doing this. I've been streaming WrestleManias where I'm supposed to be right now, but I am not. I'm preparing to put out The Way We Talk. We're trying to get the audio done on that as soon as possible here. And of course, Landline, you could catch now since you're at home, you're doing nothing. Landline with myself and Tom Arnold and Betsy Brandt, Nick Searcy, the Chicago Cubs, Ryan Sandberg, Wrigley Field, Chicago locations at its finest. It's cute. It's funny. And you could find it on Amazon Prime. You could find it on Tubi, I believe. You can find it video on demand, iTunes, wherever you get your video on demand needs. We are distributed everywhere except Netflix for whatever reason, which I've gotten into a stink about a bunch of times, and I never got a good answer about it. But Amazon Prime is, if you're a Prime member, you can see it for free right now. So go check out Landline if you have a shot. And in a couple minutes, I'll be joined in on a Zoom call by Adam Rodriguez, a couple good-looking guys on the phone. And Hillary will be joining me as well. I'm going to have Hillary give herself a quick little intro. And hopefully we bring you a great, fun interview with Adam Rodriguez. I've never done one on Zoom, so hang in there with me if there's any issues, any problems. Due to this quarantine, we've been trying new things. And everyone I've talked to says Zoom is going to give us better quality. So I'm gonna give it a go, and I'll be back with you in a couple minutes, and we'll start the interview. Thank you. But welcome back to the Matthew Aaron Show. I'm sitting down here with Adam Rodriguez. You just called in, Hillary. Give everyone your big introduction. I already set it up for you. You didn't hear the opening, but go ahead, Hillary. Set it up. Go for it.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't hear the opening either. I didn't hear. Yeah. Now I get to like figure out if Matt likes me or not. But
I said you must be very bored. that you want to talk to Adam and I about life. So yeah.
I'm very bored, but yeah, it's Hillary Barriford. I'm an actress and writer and producer, and probably most famously Matt's producing partner in this little world. So yeah. That's me.
And Adam Rodriguez, of course, everybody knows Adam from, and I did a big promo for it beforehand, but once again, I mean, everyone knows you from, I think my first big introduction to you was probably CSI Miami, and then sure. You were recently on Criminal Minds. You have Penny Dreadful, City of Angels coming out in a couple weeks, but then you also, I mean, you were on Empire. I know you were in About Last Night, which I loved. I wasn't expecting to either. I loved the remake to About Last Night. If people haven't seen that, it's really good.
They did a great job. Yeah. Steve Pink and Michael Ealy and Kevin, everybody did such a great job. I did. did really like the way that movie turned out.
I mean, was that scary for you, though, to adapt a Mamet play into a Kevin Hart movie, kind of, or a Michael Ealy? Like, I mean, it was just like a weird concept in my head, because when you touch Mamet, you're kind of touching the Holy Grail, right? And then they do this remake of About Last Night.
Definitely up there in the pantheon, no doubt.
But it worked. It worked. It was really good.
Yeah, it was. It was a really well done adaptation. I really thought it was excellent.
Who directed that? Was that Steve Pink?
A guy named Steve Pink.
Yeah, he's great. Steve Pink, of course, famously, I think he co-wrote Gross Point Blank, and they did Hot Tub Time Machine and High Fidelity. Steve's really talented. He's great.
He is. He really is. And the movie managed to be funny and still have the soul that it needed to have. And everybody turned in great performances. And that's, you know, in a lot of ways, you've always got to give credit to a good director for that.
Killer performances. And what I forgot about, and I mean, because this is like 14 years old for me, is I forgot you starred in the J-Lo video, If You Had My Love. I totally...
Oh, my God, that was you, Adam?
I totally forgot.
I almost forgot, too. Yeah. I think I was about 14 also.
Hey, I mean, that had to be a good payday. Wow. That's good exposure, bro.
it's so funny. I mean, that ended up being a really good summer for me. That was that job turned out to bring a lot more good things than I expected.
How was the nightlife after you do that video?
It was funny. I mean, I'll tell you what's funny is that when I did the video, I actually shot pieces of that video twice. The first little sequence that I was in was when they were doing the main shoot for the video, and there's literally like you see me for a flash, and there's an image of like light being projected on my face. And I'm laying down, I think on someone's lap, on a girl's lap. I was laying down, and you just see this light go over my face. And then, I don't know, a few weeks later, they decided that they wanted to add an element to the video that tied in the internet, because the internet was just, like, sort of emerging at that
right.
time. This is spring of 99, and those first Apple computers, the first iMac had come out, and they were, you know, different colors or whatever. And that's the computer I'm on at the beginning of the video.
So they got their plug in.
It's crazy to think. Actually, it's so funny, man. You're taking me back now, because that screen, it was literally like a 13-inch television screen with, you know, glass monitor, and it was heavy, and, you know, it was like an old television.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was the cutting-edge technology at the time. So anyway, the video starts off with me looking at this television, you know, at this this iMac, and they added this whole thing about me being a voyeur and, you know, tapping into the world of Jennifer Lopez. And so that's
ended up
being added later.
I just can't imagine, because I'm just an average dude and an average looking dude, and like, but I imagine if I starred in a J-Lo video in 99 and I went to a club in Miami or LA or New York for like 3 months, I could do whatever I want with whoever I want. Like, every girl's coming up to you. That had to be a really good time for you.
It was a good summer. It really was a good summer.
And then
I definitely have some fond memories of that.
Yeah.
Unexpectedly. I mean, who knew? That video really became like this phenomenon. I mean, that really jump started Jennifer's music career in a way that I don't think anybody saw coming. I mean, she just exploded. And that was really the beginning of J-Lo as, you know, as she's known now. I mean, before that, it was Jennifer Lopez. And so that video was a phenomenon, and I definitely I enjoyed all the benefits of having been a part of it.
That's wild, dude. Good for you. And then, you know, I'm like maybe he plans this out like once a decade, because then you did Magic Mike 2. I'm like, well, here it comes again. He's gonna get all the women all over again. They love Adam Rodriguez.
That's funny, man. And all I've ever wanted to do is be the hopeless romantic that I am. get to
That's wild.
Find the one, which I've been lucky enough to find. So, but yeah, definitely needed some practice, and those gigs helped me get some practice along the way.
I bet you got to work with you got to work with my favorite, this is low key, but Kevin Nash is like one of my favorite people alive.
My brother,
He cracks me up.
He's on my list too, man.
He's the best. And then you get to work at that whole crew just seemed awesome. That whole crew from Magic Mike, Joe's great, and McConaughey and Tatum.
Great group of guys. I mean, really, we really formed some strong bonds on that movie. Just everyone there. No one had any ego. Everybody was supportive of each other. We all had to really bust our asses to get in shape and to diet and to dance. And, you know, none of us were dancers by trade. I mean, Chan really was the most experienced dancer out of everybody in that movie. And, the rest of us had to really let go of any inhibition about dancing and learn these routines and jump right in. And we really all had each other's back in a great way. I mean, that was a beautiful experience. Both of those movies, the first one and the second one.
Is there an audition process for Magic Mike, or does Soderbergh just go, "Yeah, Adam's cool"?
You know, I think they put together a list. You know, they had a woman named Carmen Cuba that was the casting director, and
she's great.
Carmen's great, and I think that they had their list. And they what Steven does, and I imagine a lot of the people that make great stuff do this because they're about the work and they want the work experience to be right.
Yeah.
To my understanding, they go out and they vet everybody basically. You know, they have their list and they start making calls. And what's this person like to work with? They call people you've worked with. They call people they know that might know you. And sort of, you know, then once you're vetted, then then maybe you get an invitation to the party. And that's pretty much what happened for me.
I was going to say, though, they can't call you in and be like, "All right, take your shirt off and let's see what we got going on here."
Yeah. And let me tell you, thank God that's
they
not
can.
What they did. Because when I got that call, I was not ready to go. I was not even close to being in the kind of shape that I needed to be in. I mean, I remember hanging up the phone with Chan, actually, and feeling like, okay, this is going to be great. I'm going to do a Soderbergh movie. This is incredible.
Yeah, right.
And the idea, though, then the weight of the fact that I had to be in a thong and, essentially naked on camera, dancing, in a strip club, all of that started to, settle in. And the nerves hit, and it was like, holy shit.
Yeah, and then you're thinking how much bacon.
I think we had, 6 weeks to get ready, 6 or 7 weeks to get ready.
What's your diet like when you have 6 weeks?
Within a day or two, I had a friend of mine, an old friend of mine that's a chef, Chef Rohan. I called Ro and I said, "Look, man, the movie." I sat down. I went. I mean, I spent more money getting prepared for that movie than I made on the movie itself.
I believe it was a
chance of a lifetime. I was so excited about it. I went to a nutritionist. Settled on a diet. How many calories a day I needed to be taking in to lose weight, because I needed to lose weight. Believe it or not, the idea then becomes not about trying to put on muscle in 6 weeks, because it's hard to put on a lot of muscle in that short amount of time. So the idea is to try and put on. I mean, to exercise heavily and try to put muscle, but the focus is more about losing weight so that you look, you look ripped on camera.
Yeah.
And so that ended up being the focus, was really about just, getting my diet to the place where I was burning more than I was taking in and starting to whittle down, all of the layers that were hiding the beautifully shaped muscles underneath all of that, that layer of skin that had to be peeled back. And so that took about 6-7 weeks. I mean, and we kept that through the entire shoot of the movie. And everybody was really supportive of each other. I mean, it was like I didn't eat a piece of fruit. I didn't eat a piece of bread. I didn't have a drop of alcohol. I was so committed to the diet that, I mean, breakfast was like maybe one egg yolk and three whites, and then like literally 2 tablespoons of oatmeal, and, you know, a cup of coffee that I savored. I mean, and then no sweetener on any of that stuff. Absolutely no sugar, no fruit. Then there were like some very minimal snacks throughout the day, like maybe a quarter cup of almonds. And then each other meal was maybe a 6 ounce, you know, piece of protein, whether it's a piece of fish or chicken, I don't know, 6 ounces of a vegetable, and then maybe like 3 ounces of a carb. I mean, it was really specific. It was really specific. And I will tell you that I committed to it to the letter. I did not wane, not one bit.
I looked that
I
way.
To show up ready.
I want to hire you.
Adam.
It was, I mean, the first, yeah.
I have a question. I want to know how you psyched yourself up before going into dance mode on set. Did you guys have like a little, like, how did you get yourself into that mode of like, I'm going to be a stripper right now. Let's do this.
You know, there was this vibe that we really all jumped into these characters. They were very loosely written. And what was great about that was that they were shaped enough that you had something to start with, and then it was about really taking it and making it your own, and everybody showed up to play. I mean, we all did the time to do our homework and decide who we wanted these characters to be, and Steven gave us the latitude to do that, you know, whether it was improv,
awesome.
On camera, or we were spending, you know, in between, you know, just in character and, you know, with these people that we had created and, like, you know, just doing shtick and little bits of what we thought were funny and, you know, just really finding these people and bringing them to life. And, you know, I think that's a lot of what made the movie work for, you know, for those characters that you see in the background. I mean, it's focused on Chan and it's focused on McConaughey and, you know, but these other characters that you saw pepper the background, I think they brought enough life to the movie that when we decided to do a sequel, you know, there was enough there to make a movie about. And I think that just being in that mode and everybody being that committed made going out and doing these dance numbers. It was like getting ready to go play a game. You know, I played a lot of team sports growing up.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like. It just felt like being on a great team.
Yeah, that's the vibe you get. You get the vibe watching it. You get the vibe watching it.
Totally. Yeah, you do.
I also got that vibe that you had a really good team with Criminal Minds, because I know Joe Montaigne a little bit. I used to do this podcast from his restaurant. And Joe's a really good dude.
Oh, get out of here. Out of Taste of Chicago?
Yeah, Joe's the best.
Yeah.
And, like, Joe called my mom for
he's
her...
He's the best.
One year for her birthday, Joe called my mom. My mom went out in, like, negative 10 degree weather and had, like, an hour-long talk with Joe. He's just, like, the coolest dude. And so I've gotten to, like, meet some people from Criminal Minds. Yeah, and I got to meet some people from the show, like Aisha and all those type of people that were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just seems like you had a really great experience there, too. Everyone seems really cool from that
phenomenal group. I mean, I'm so grateful to have been a part of that. You know, I wish I would have had more time with those folks.
Yeah.
It was just up and down, just an absolute dream gig, because everybody there, I love them. I love spending time with them. We all still talk very regularly. I mean, there's not a week that goes by. We've got a group text going, and I mean, a week would be a long time. It's usually not more than four or five days that someone doesn't chime in and check up on everybody and see how everybody's doing. And you know, we have some back and forth, all of the time. And Joe, like you said, I mean, I just Papa Joe, I call him, and I Joe. He's just
so cute.
He really is just a prince, just a class act through and through. You know, the guy, a consummate professional, sensitive guy, you know, great actor, great, you know, great director. He's not an iota of pretension about it.
None.
He's just
zero.
A really soft of the earth down guy.
Zero.
I love Joe.
If you give Joe the spotlight or the stage to tell stories or like he'll go for like an hour. Like I would sit down Joe and you just it's like you wind him up and you let him go and you're like, go Joe, I want to hear about Madonna. I want to hear your Madonna stories. I want to hear like he has the best stories ever. Yeah.
The best. I mean, and what a career, right?
Just
what an amazing career.
Yeah,
starting out in the theater, met his wife doing hair.
Yeah.
You know, in a production of Hair. I mean, he just, you know, played bass in a band. I mean, it's just great stories. Just great stories. You definitely can't. You're gonna hear about Uncle Willie for sure. which is his real uncle, not his penis.
just to be clear
folks, but Joe, man, I miss seeing those guys every day. I really that was a treat to get to join that band for a little while and just get to spend time with everybody and make those friendships.
Yeah, it's great. And then, you know, you talk about how acting is such a great career if you're able to make a career out of it, is you get to do something like Magic Mike or you get to do something like CSI Miami, and then you're doing something like Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, which is it's a period piece. I have not been privy to any episodes yet. What I get from the trailer and what I get from everything I read is it's got a little Chinatown vibe to it where it's about like the first LA freeway being built. You know, it's about that era, but then it's also about Mexican American culture. Could you kind of walk me through what this show is about?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Chinatown vibes. For sure. I mean, it's in that period of time. It's set in 1938.
Yeah.
And the heart of the show is this Mexican-American family. All the kids are born here in Los Angeles, and they live at that time in an area called Belvedere Heights, which was one of the neighborhoods in a section of L.A. now that would better be known as East L.A. Excuse me. There was Belvedere Heights. There was Mar Avila. There was I'm blanking out on some of the names now. I actually retouched my notes on all of that time. But all these great little pockets of neighborhoods, and they were all inhabited by various different ethnic groups.
Yeah.
You know, there was a black neighborhood. There was a Mexican neighborhood. There was a Filipino neighborhood. There was a Jewish neighborhood. And oftentimes, you know, these neighborhoods, they crossed over into each other. And so all of these different ethnicities, they were living amongst each other, but they were the working class of L.A. And L.A. was burgeoning at the time. It's pre-World War II. The city's growing. Industry's happening. And most of the rich people that inhabited L.A. at that time, the real money, all existed in Pasadena. And so if you don't know anything about L.A. geography, Pasadena is a little bit north of the city of L.A., the downtown area of Los Angeles. And so in between Pasadena and downtown Los Angeles is where all of these other neighborhoods existed. And the city wanted to build a freeway that connected Pasadena to downtown so that all the rich folks that were living in Pasadena could get to and from downtown where most of life happened, business, commerce, you know, politics, all of that was taking place downtown. So they wanted to build a way for people to travel more rapidly to and from Pasadena to downtown. And so the 110 freeway was conceptualized and they were going to build it. And to do that, they were going to have to basically disperse all of the people that lived along the path that they wanted to take to make the freeway. And, you know, as it goes, you know, not just in Los Angeles, but around the world, that the people that are easily displaced are those that are, you know, easily compromised and not thought much of. And so those usually end up being the poor working class folks. And a lot of the people that are those folks are first generation Americans or new immigrants, and they don't have the political muscle to fight back. And so they are, you know, they're often stepped over. And we've seen that time and time again with various different ethnic groups throughout America's history. And this time around in 1938 here in L.A., it, for the most part, is the Mexican community, the Mexican-American community,
yeah.
Or new immigrants that are coming from Mexico. And so our family, the Vega family, is the heart of the show, really. And the all of the story sort of centers around this family and branches out in some way. I play the oldest brother of the family, and I'm a community organizer and a union leader. My middle brother, who the story really centers around, he's the first Chicano LAPD detective. And so he's battling being the first, you know, Mexican-American on the LAPD. And of course, there's, you know, there's racism and you know, prejudice all about. He's got a great partner who's this grizzly old Jewish guy who is played by Nathan Lane. And the two of these guys are an interesting duo.
Oh, yeah.
He's so great in this. Nathan's brilliant. I mean, you've never seen him like this before. He's really gonna show people a side of himself that I don't think I can't recall seeing him in a role like this ever before. I really can't wait to see people see him like this.
Is he really dark, so Adam?
He's dark. I mean, he's still got that Nathan Lane, you know, wit and humor about him. He can still,
yeah,
you know, snap a joke that'll make you chuckle. But there's a darkness to it. There's a darkness to it, and there's a gristle that you haven't seen from him before. He's tough.
He
plays a really tough character, And I think he did such a wonderful job. I've only seen one episode myself, but what I saw, you know, I'm really excited for people to see Nathan this way. And so, and then we've got the mother of the family. The matriarch is played by Adriana Barraza, who is an Academy Award nominated actress who's just absolutely brilliant. I mean, she's wonderful. And we've got a kid named Jonathan Nieves that plays the baby brother. And then we have the real baby of the family, is our sister, played by a girl named Jessica Garza. And that's the family that the story centers around. And also a wonderful group of people. And Daniel Zavato, actually, I didn't mention, plays the brother who's the detective. And he's doing such a great job as well. I know I sort of went off on this sidetrack about
No.
It's fascinating.
No, because you brought up something that actually makes this is part of the reason this show is so relevant now. If you're gonna watch Penny Dreadful, City Angels, for people in Chicago a lot of people listen to the show because I'm from Chicago. Freeways back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, much like 290 in Chicago, were built with very strategically to keep races apart.
Yeah.
So there's a element of racism that actually is very relevant today, because what the freeways usually did was not only was it built to make the quickest way from point A to point B, but it was to put the richer people on one side and the poor people on another, or to put the white Anglo-Saxons on one side and the minorities on another. And that's what the 110 did. And it's another reason why if you take the 110 ever from Los Angeles to Pasadena, I mean, that's pretty much it. That's the drive. then you're getting on some other freeway, because it's an old freeway and it's there just for one reason. So I'm really fascinated by this story. I'm really looking forward to that show.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I will say that, you know, in terms of its richness in history and just in the story itself, John Logan is a writer extraordinaire. I mean, I wasn't very familiar with his work before. I mean, I was actually unknowingly. I mean, it's Gladiator,
right? Aviator, Skyfall.
All of these movies. But I really wasn't familiar with John by name, and I in doing his job, I have become such a huge fan of his work. Him as a person, because I love him. I think he's such a special human being. But his writing is, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm able to sink my teeth so far into his words and the story that he's trying to tell. This has been my favorite acting job of my career, because I have just been able to connect so deeply with the character and the story that John's trying to tell that I've never felt this way, this strongly about a story I've been a part of telling.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much being said. None of it is on the nose. It's sophisticated and it's deep and it's just so rich. I've never been more excited about being part of something.
Well, and for those listening, if you want another selling point on Penny Dreadful, City Angels on Showtime, is John Logan wrote all the best Bond movies. He is a really good writer. Just like those Bond movies, nothing's on the nose. It sounds like this is very similar. And of course he was behind the original Penny Dreadful as well. So if you watch that, that's of course
Penny
something.
Dreadful, yeah. Tony Award winning play Red, about Mark Rothko. That was, you know, it's funny, actually, now that with this downtime, I've been reading other works of John, because I hadn't read anything other than the material we've been working on together. He in everything that he writes about, I think that he has such a knack for getting to the common human denominator in all of it. And if you're paying attention, really opening your eyes and your heart to something that you might have missed otherwise. It's been a joy to be a part of telling a story that I hope is going to open people's, you know, minds and hearts to something that's right in front of us all of the time, especially in the political times we're living in now. We get so focused on what we want to be divided about that we really lose sight of what we actually have in common, which is usually far greater than what we disagree upon.
Right.
I think John's got a real knack for getting to the heart of that. And I'm hoping that the story that we're telling is going to
shed
some light on that for people.
And for our listeners, another pal of mine and a pal of the show, Lynn Shea is on the show as well. So if you like Lynn's work.
Love Lynn.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah,
she's a legend.
She's the sweetest woman you'll ever meet in your life. Like, literally. I don't know if I've ever met anyone nicer than Lynn Shea.
No, she is such a doll. I mean, I get such a warm. I love her. She's a light. She's a light. She's a beautiful
and a pro.
Inside and out. Inside and out.
Yes.
Beautiful. Yeah, love her.
Yeah,
really
I agree.
Love her.
I agree.
We've had some good time. We really connected. I really connected with Lynn, actually.
Yeah.
Day one, the first day I met her.
You're right, though. She's like a light. She draws you in. She makes you feel, you know, at home and comfortable. Like, the moment you meet her, you're like, I want to be friends with you forever. Please like me. I love
her. Like me. Exactly.
Yeah.
Please, yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, she's just
100%.
The sweetest. So this is exciting.
She's got such a great character in the show. I mean, if you're a fan of her, you're going to love watching her in this.
Yeah, she's a great actress. I mean, so this is exciting for you. Is there anything else going on other than Penny Dreadful? I know Penny Dreadful's plenty, and I know you're quarantined, so you can't be in production. but is there anything else coming out that you got?
The Criminal Minds, they just finished airing the last episode that we had.
I saw.
We finished filming last May, but then they held off on 10 episodes. They held off airing them until the beginning of this year, and they just finished those probably a month ago, I guess.
Yeah, it was a cute ending. We saw the series finale. Yeah, it was cute.
It was different because
Criminal Minds is like this dark show about serial killers or about killers in general, and then the series finale was all about you guys enjoying each other's company, and there was a lot of very cute moments, and they kind of wrap up the mystery plot line in the first like 30 minutes. It was different for a series finale.
I think they did a great job. I mean, it's always a difficult thing to do to, you know, put a period on, you know, 15 years of doing something. I mean, this 15 years. And so there's so much ground to cover. Fans want closure on so many different levels. It's near impossible to do that. And I think Erica Messer and Kirsten Langness that also helped write the episode. They did a great job.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Sort of, you know, touching everything that everybody would want to have addressed to say goodbye, and did the best you can in a situation like that. It's, you know, you wish you had 10 episodes to wind the show down, but you know, we didn't know the end was coming. So,
before we let you go, Adam, what are you doing during your isolation? Can you give anybody some like tips or some hobbies? What should people be doing? How are you handling all this?
Well, I think that you should pay attention to how you're taking care of yourself, move your body around, get some exercise. I don't care if that's running in place or jumping jacks or whatever ridiculous thing you want to do, because I just think that it's so easy to sit around on the couch all day. And for me, I could do that no problem for weeks at a time. But I've been pushing myself to do some bit of exercise every day, and I got to say that does have me feeling really good. Try and get some sunlight. You can step out and get in the sun for 10 or 15 minutes and just let some sunshine on your face if you can, depending on where you are in the country.
Yeah.
And then I think once you get those two things done every day, I really think take the time to do the things we say we always want to do, you know, I mean, whether that's take an online course or read a book or write something down or, you know, learn to play an instrument. Whatever the thing is that you've been constantly telling yourself, one day when I have time, I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? You've got the time. Do it. You know,
no more excuses.
It's kind of a time to, you know, stop talking the shit and do it, you know, and be honest with yourself. I think it's a time to really be honest with yourself, you know, because you can go down one of two roads here. I mean, you can go down the road of, you know, the least resistance and just sit on your ass and wait for the time to pass and watch all the depressed things on the news and the body count going up every day and watch the clock get pushed back on how far this thing is going to go before, you know, we're actually done with the quarantine phase, and you know, and all of those things are just depressing, and they compound, and you know, and they don't do anything to make your life better.
That's right.
And I really am a firm believer that this is a time where, okay, you know, you've got absolutely no excuse. No one's expecting you to be at a job you don't want to be at. No one's expecting you to be anywhere you don't want to go, with anybody you don't want to be with. You've got time for you right now. Take advantage of that time for you and focus on emerging from this thing a more fulfilled person than you were. You know, I think this is a time, you've got time to actually give thought to what really does matter to you, so that when the floodgates open and we're allowed back out of the, you know, of our space that we're quarantined to, I don't want to say cages because it's certainly not that, but you know, when we are allowed to go out and interact again, that you go back into the world with a bit more purpose, with a bit more understanding of who you are and what you want. You've got the time to think about it right now. So make use of the time. Turn the TV off for a half an hour every day and just sit and think. Or don't turn it on until later.
Well, we can
done that. Exactly. You know.
Yeah, we can come out of this better people. And I know Hillary and I hope.
I think we better. I think we better, or, you know, or this is going to be an even worse disaster than it is.
I agree with you.
We've got to come out of it.
100%.
I think Hillary and
Matt and I agree, the way agree
we
with lo- you.
Yeah, the way we look at it is, let's get all our projects ready, and then as soon as this is over, we're going to have all these projects ready to go to L.A., take meetings, do all our things. But what we're really hoping is that we come back to L.A. with a slightly less egotistical business. Like, hopefully, if anything good came out of this, and this should be in other areas of life as well, I'm just speaking personally to us, is hopefully the ego has been humbled a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and listen, the only way to do that, because unfortunately, if we had any control over that, I think there are enough people that want that out there, mm-hmm. that I wish we could move the needle further, faster, but we can only do it for ourselves, and we got to take this time to make sure that we do that for ourselves, and that takes a lot of thought and a lot of being, conscious about self. And when you re-enter that world that you want to be less egotistical, you've got to make sure that that's where we're all coming from as well. Not to be corny, but, we've got to be that change that we want to see in the world. And it's real, and that's why the time that we have now is so important to take and do that. Do the work, man. You got to do the work for yourself. If you're home and you're sitting around and, on social media or be on the phone and we can talk shit with people we want about the things we want to be a certain way, and meanwhile we're not doing things that we need to do in that way, and, quite honestly, shut up, if you're not doing it, then you I think that's the gift that we've got to really dig for in all of this. That's the underlying treasure of this thing, I think, is what you're saying. And then I think those things will happen.
Yeah, I agree.
If enough people come out of this with that mindset, then there'll just be less room for that. Less room for the bullshit.
Well, thank you, Adam, so much for joining us. Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, that's coming out later this month, April 26th. And and Adam, I had a blast. Thanks for the positive conversation. Good times, man. I hope we can catch up on the other side of this.
Yeah, me too, man. Great talking to you guys.
Yeah,
both of you. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, and, great.
Nice chatting with you, Adam.
I hope you like the show.
Thanks, brother. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right. Be safe and healthy. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay, well, that was my interview with Adam Rodriguez and Hillary Barriford, and Hillary, of course, hung up right away. She was only here for Adam. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's about right. anyways, we'll have more for you in the coming week. I have some really high-profile, great interviews planned. Pat also is booking some high-profile, great interviews. And I hope you enjoyed this one with Adam Rodriguez. We talked Magic Mike. We talked CSI Miami briefly. We talked Criminal Minds. We talked Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. Really great conversation. Thanks, Adam, for joining us. And we really do look forward to talking to you again. Thank you, and have a good night, everybody.